Well, tomorrow, in one of its most anticipated cases of the year, the Supreme Court takes up the question of whether to overturn key parts of the landmark Voting Rights Act of 1965, which put an end to unpassable literacy tests and fees, poll taxes, that kept African Americans from voting during Jim Crow. The law required that states and counties that discriminated in that way had to get Justice Department clearance for any changes in their elections. The law's defenders say it's still necessary today to protect voters such as 85-year-old Augustine Carter of Virginia, who spoke at a rally in Richmond recently. She does not have a driver's license, and Virginia is moving towards voting rules requiring government-issued photo IDs.
Anytime you take the right away from me to vote, that takes my freedom. And if I don't have no freedom, that makes me a slave.
But a longtime critic of the Voting Rights Act, political scientist Abigail Thernstrom, is one of many saying that the fact that there's a black president means the law isn't necessary.
With Barack Obama as president, America is ready for a Voting Rights Act premised on the belief that racial animus is a marginal element in American politics.
Well, today we want to get a primer ahead of tomorrow's arguments in the Supreme Court with Mary Orndorff-Troyan, who reports on Southern politics for Gannett Newspapers. And Mary, a lawyer for Shelby County in Alabama is going to argue that the voting rights law is outdated because the South has changed and the law is only enforced in a few states. They don't want all of it overturned, though. Just two key parts?
Exactly. Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act says you can't discriminate against anybody based on their race when it comes to voting. And that part is not being challenged. So the Voting Rights Act will still be in effect no matter what the Supreme Court does. However, it's the enforcement of the Voting Rights Act and how rigidly that's enforced. That's what's at stake here. And the two sections you're talking about are Section 4B and Section 5. Section 5 is the part of the law that says, okay, when Congress passed the law in 1965, they said these states and these areas of the country have the worst record when it comes to discriminating against minority voters. And so because of their record, we have to put in this extraordinary provision, and it is extraordinary. Everybody on both sides agrees with that, that you can't change anything about your voting procedures without first getting the permission of the Justice Department to say, okay, yes, this voting procedure change does not discriminate against minorities. And Section 4B is the formula that Congress came up with in 1965 to determine which states were subject to Section 5. So what we have now is 9 states that are fully covered by Section 5 and parts of 7 other states, mostly in the South, not entirely, but mostly in the South.
And again, the test, the litmus test back in the 60s was if a state or a county had something like a literacy test, you know, some sort of a way of testing whether somebody could vote, they were then swept into federal oversight.
Correct. Yeah. Congress, you know, just took a look at what was going on in the country at the time and said, we need to come up with some sort of formula that makes sure that we cover these areas that have the worst records. And that formula was based on voter registration figures and voter turnout data in the 1964 presidential election. It was eventually updated in 1972. But that's exactly the point of this case tomorrow, is that formula outdated? You know, voter registration and voter turnout has obviously, those statistics have changed a lot since 1972. Blacks and whites register and vote in almost equal proportion. In some parts of the South, even blacks register at a higher rate and vote at a higher rate than white voters. So what Shelby County is asking the court to consider is, hey, this formula is outdated. It hasn't been updated. And because of that, it's unfair to those states to continue to be judged by standards of 1965.
Well, and they're also pointing to a 2009 Supreme Court ruling in which there was some sort of advice from the court on this. And Clarence Thomas at the time was the only justice saying that the Voting Rights Act was unconstitutional.
That 2009 case that you mentioned, the Texas case, that Justice Thomas had a dissenting opinion and is very instructive to explain where we are today. The court at that time had a case out of Texas that was challenging the constitutionality of Section 5. And the justices decided to let that jurisdiction in Texas kind of off on a technicality. They said that jurisdiction should be eligible to bail out, which is a key provision of the law. If you have a clean record, you haven't discriminated against anybody, the Justice Department agrees, you can be bailed out and no longer be covered by Section 5. So the Supreme Court in that decision said, okay, Texas Utility District, you can bail out. But in their opinion, 8 of the justices signed off on, they said, even though we're letting this Texas Utility District bail out, we still have serious concerns about the constitutionality of Section 5. We're not going to get into it in this case, but they went on record very clearly saying that because 4B is outdated, the language that they use that everybody comes back to is the Section 5 imposes big burdens on jurisdictions. And they said current burdens need to be justified by current needs. And that's the language that Shelby County is pointing to now. They're saying, hey, look, current burdens are not being met by current needs. That the situation in the South has changed to the point that Section 5 is no longer necessary.
So let's review here. You've got 4B, which lists, if I understand this, lists the states that it covers, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina, Texas, and Virginia, and Alaska, because of a history of discrimination against Native Alaskans. And then you've got Section 5, which requires states and counties that are listed to get preclearance from the federal government whenever they want to change something having to do with voting in their area, redistricting, moving a polling place, requiring ID cards. And you just also mentioned bailout. So there is a provision that states or counties or jurisdictions can bail out of this federal requirement. Explain more about that.
That's a really interesting part of this law that I think is going to be a significant part of what the Supreme Court has to consider. When Congress passed the law in 1965, they knew it was pretty extraordinary to give the Justice Department this kind of authority over certain parts of the country. So they created this provision known as bailout. If you have a clean record, you can petition to the Justice Department. They can take a look at your record as a city or as a county or as a state and say, you know what, you guys have done things right for the last 10 years. We're going to let you bail out and you no longer have to be covered by Section 5.
It's a 10-year look back.
10-year look back, exactly. And I think what's important about it is the Supreme Court over the last 45 years has upheld the constitutionality of Section 5 in part because of this bailout provision. Because Congress allowed jurisdictions to either bail out if they deserve it and are worthy, or if there's a jurisdiction out there that is not currently covered by Section 5 and should be, they can be bailed in. And it's that flexibility that the Justice Department and the civil rights organizations say means that this law has some give and take and therefore should be continued to be upheld as constitutional.
Well, they also point to the fact that the Obama administration has released a record number of towns from federal supervision.
That's another really interesting part about this. Since 2009, since the Texas case that we mentioned earlier, more smaller jurisdictions were suddenly eligible for bailout that weren't eligible before. So that's the main reason why you have seen so many more jurisdictions bail out in the last few years. But part of the argument is the Obama administration allowing more bailouts to sort of justify the constitutionality. Like they can go to the justices and say, hey, look, we're being reasonable. If anybody's got a clean record, they can come to us and they can bail out.
There's been some argument that the Obama administration is also bailing out towns that really everybody knows aren't having problems now. I think some of them might have been in New Hampshire, for instance.
Yes, the state of New Hampshire would actually be the first statewide bailout. And some conservatives are saying, look, the Justice Department is being disingenuous with some of these bailouts. They are bending the rules and letting more jurisdictions bail out than they should just for the purposes of improving their argument before the Supreme Court. It's a little convoluted, but I think the number of bailouts, especially in the last 4 years since that Texas case, is going to be a part of what the justices consider.
Reporter Mary Orndorff-Troyan of Gannett Newspapers. When we come back, more arguments for and against the provisions of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, arguments that will be heard before the Supreme Court tomorrow, including we're going to address an interesting take on redistricting. That's in 1 minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with reporter Mary Orndorff-Troyan of Gannett News about the Voting Rights Act. Tomorrow, the Supreme Court is going to hear arguments on two sections, 4B, which outlines which states should be under federal scrutiny, and 5, requires those states get permission for any changes in their voting. The court will be hearing arguments about whether they're necessary. Supporters say they are because of new voter ID laws that have passed in several states. Here's another clip of Augustine Carter of Richmond, Virginia. Again, she does not have a photo ID.
My state ID that I had expired in 2006. When I went to have it renewed, they told me that they could not accept the credentials that I had. Mm. The words they said to me at motor vehicle was, "You cannot prove that you were even born in the United States."
But Mary Troyan, Virginia, her state, is covered by provisions 4B and 5. And just last week, the Virginia House approved a rule requiring voter IDs. That's bad news for Augustine. But is it also for the state? Because as you explain, states can bail out of the federal scrutiny. But what happens if Virginia passes photo ID requirements?
If they pass a voter ID law that the Department of Justice ultimately decides is discriminatory or has a discriminatory effect, then the Department of Justice would object to that, thereby ruining the state of Virginia's otherwise clean record. So there is a question about whether or not if they go ahead with a voter ID law that the Department of Justice objects to, whether or not that would ruin their chances for getting a statewide bailout.
Meanwhile, you have Shelby County, Alabama, which is the county that's gotten this case all the way to the Supreme Court, and they're arguing against the law in the Supreme Court, saying that it's unconstitutional. But they have not asked for a bailout, and the thinking is that they feel they may not get one because there are some accusations that a city within the county might have done redistricting to sideline a black politician.
Well, yeah, and that's the civil rights groups really point to that case and say, you know, look, here's an example right in Shelby County's backyard of there was a black member of the city council, and the city of Calera annexed a whole bunch of property, and in the process, the district lines got redrawn, and then the next election, that black member of the city council lost, and the Department of Justice objected because they thought those new district lines were unfair to the minority voters of Calera. They ordered a new election, and then that black city council member was reelected.
On the other hand, you have conservatives who argue that redistricting so that there is black representation, they say that has its negative sides. Here again is political scientist Abigail Thernstrom at a forum on C-SPAN a few years ago. She did say that the passage of the Voting Rights Act was one of the great moments in American history, but then it has this negative effect. Let's listen.
Most black legislators are elected in majority black districts created to meet the demands of the statute. While the country has moved steadily, if unevenly, towards racial integration, the law has created a black legislative class generally inexperienced in putting together biracial coalitions, elected from districts in which there are no political pressures to move to the center.
Now, Mary, I can hear people listening to that and thinking, well, when you have an all-white district that elects white politicians, are they also, you know, inexperienced? But your thoughts on that comment?
Well, that's another really interesting part of this debate. And I've been talking to some people just in the last few days about the impact on these majority black districts across the South if Section 5 were to go away. I think originally when state legislators looked at the Voting Rights Act in Section 5 and they drew these majority black districts, everybody hailed that as progress, that this was an opportunity for black elected officials to get elected. I mean, think about 1965. There weren't any black statewide elected officials in the South. But what has happened over time is this trend of, okay, well, if a state legislature wants to create a black majority district, well, let's put as many black voters in there as possible and make it a 60, 70, 75% black district. Well, what that does is makes all the other districts even more white. And in some cases, it makes it more likely that they will elect a Republican. In states like Alabama and South Carolina, there's only one majority black congressional district, and most of the black voters are in it, and all the other districts are even more white and even more conservative. Conservatives say, hey, look, this is working for us, and the Democrats and black Democrats in particular say we still get a majority black district. So that's an interesting twist on what will happen if Section 5 goes away.
Well, and do critics of the law also have a point that there are states that maybe wouldn't even have been considered in the 60s that should be considered now. In other words, it's unconstitutional to pick out just some of these southern states and leave out, for instance, Pennsylvania, where strict voter ID rules were also passed last year. A court has put them on hold. You know, and Pennsylvania is not a Voting Rights Act state.
Yeah, that's certainly an argument from Shelby County. And they say, look, it's either all of us or none of us.
Well, you know, again, the law has its fervent supporters, especially because of what they see as shenanigans, I think was the word that was used in the last election. Voting hours changed to the last minute. Of course, the ID cards we mentioned. The president of Rock the Vote says the Voting Rights Act protects young voters. But what's your sense of what the Supreme Court's going to do?
Oh, wow. I have no way of knowing. I've heard two different theories from, you know, the legal scholars. And one is that 4B is obviously outdated. I mean, if that data hasn't been changed since 1972, obviously Section 4B doesn't necessarily reflect current conditions in the South when it comes to voter registration and voter turnout.
And again, that's the listing of the states and counties it covers.
That's the formula that Congress used to create the list of the states that were covered, yes. There's a belief out there that, I mean, even though it's been upheld four times over the last 45 years, that this is the time where the court's going to say, hey, wait a minute. Either you update 4B and take another look at conditions on the ground across the country, or you get rid of Section 5 altogether. On the other hand, and this gets to exactly what you were talking about, there are legal scholars out there who believe that because of the voter ID fights that we've had recently, because of the redistricting fights we've had recently, that that's just more proof that Section 5 is still working, that the interests of minorities still need protection. I mean, the Department of Justice is still out there finding problems with these kinds of laws and having a disparate impact on minorities.
Yeah. And not just blacks, which was what was considered in the 60s, but Hispanics as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Mary Orndorff Troyan, who covers Southern politics for Gannett Newspapers, ahead of tomorrow's Supreme Court hearing of the arguments for and against the Voting Rights Act. Mary, thanks so much.
Thank you.
So, no need for the provisions. After all, we have a black president. Or voter IDs, fewer voting hours, keep them. We'd love your thoughts at hereandnow.org. And when we come back, who is that family lost at sea? That's enough. 1 minute here and now.